have been working on this message for a little while, but until about 3 weeks ago, it never would have had the relevance that it does right now. You may have noticed, but our world is changing. In fact, it has changed in many important ways. What we're seeing is the fulfillment of what I would consider a very major prophecy, and I don't think the world has seen it or has understood it. Even the religious world, who may have an interest in prophecy, I don't know that they recognize the significance of what just happened. A capstone on that event happened on the 3rd of January, which changed a lot of things in ways that we may not realize. Today I want to look at a particular prophecy and the relevance that it has to the world condition that is developing right now, and the implications that it has for the very near future. In Revelation 11, verse 7, there is mention of what we understand to be the beast power. And it's given in relevance to a particular time. And this is referring to the two witnesses that God is going to send during the final 3.5 years. In verse 7 it says, "And when they have finished their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them." There is going to be a reaction in the political realm against God's ordained servants, who are going to come before the world and say things that they're not interested in hearing. What is that bottomless pit? Is it a real pit? Or is it just simply a political environment that is so deep that is a good way of describing what it looks like? In Daniel chapter 10, verse 13, we're given a glimpse into something that few people realize. We live our lives watching what's going on in the world, thinking that it's just politics, that's all it is. There's people that have their agenda. They have their worldview, they have what they want the world to look like, and they go about their political business. But there's something more to it that we don't usually think about. Let's go to Daniel 10, verse 13. See, Daniel had asked for some assistance. And keep in mind, this is revealing something that is very out of our sphere of consciousness, let's say. We live in a material world. We see the world on the surface as it is. But there's something going on in the background. And that's what God wants us to know. But he gives us just this brief glimpse. He says, "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the king of Persia." There was this spiritual battle going on. It was something so fierce that whoever the individual here who is speaking, and we can presume that it's the pre-incarnate Christ, but he needed some assistance to deal with this spiritual power. And what that tells us is, we may see world events as they happen, but the question is there a spiritual force working behind the scenes? Realizing that that may be the case, it answers a lot of interesting questions, and we'll come to some of those. There is a spirit that influences the political outcomes. Here God had deemed what was to happen. He gave us a picture back in Daniel chapter 2 of four successive world empires. And this is the transition from one into the other. And for some reason, this spiritual power was working against God's plan. Think of that. Think of the implications of that. That there is a behind-the-scenes, secret spiritual movement that is affecting world events. We won't necessarily see it. But if we're careful and if we're thoughtful, we can perhaps discern that there is a spiritual power working behind the scenes. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 13:12 spelled it out very carefully. 1 Corinthians 13. And this is so true. And he's sort of alluding to what Daniel chapter 10 was revealing. But 1 Corinthians 13:12, where Paul says, "For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known." Paul is suggesting that there are things happening that we don't fully understand. We think we can understand them, and we understand them in the context of the time, but times change. And as we get closer to the time, our view through that darkened glass becomes clearer and clearer. That's kind of the point I want to make here. As we approach the time of the end, things are going to be happening that we are going to see that the world doesn't see. In Daniel 12, verse 9, we're told something, and I'm sure we understand this, but do we really understand the full implications? Daniel 12, verse 9. And this is where God had given Daniel some of the most amazing prophecies that were ever given. But Daniel didn't understand much of what he was given. Daniel was told, "Go your way. Go your way, Daniel, for these words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end." So we can't expect people of understanding throughout time to have understood the full implications of the prophecies that were before them. But we can also understand that as we approach the time of the end, that seal is going to be lifted. They're not sealed forever. They're sealed for a time. And that time, in my opinion, is right before us. And I'll explain why I think that. In Daniel chapter 7, there is a presentation of several what we could call world empires. Each one is represented by a particular animal. The first is a standing lion with the heart of a man. The second is a leaning bear that devours much flesh. The third is a leopard. And then we find that those three merge themselves into and become the fourth beast, which is exceedingly dreadful above all others. Now, if we reflect back on that in Revelation 13, we see the components of these same beasts merged into and which became the beast power of the end time. Daniel 7 gives us a description of the formation of the beast power. I've spoken on this before. Most recently, 2 years ago, December of 23, where I explained that Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 are not reiterations of one another. They're two completely separate prophecies. They both end at the same point in time. Daniel 2 ends with the 10 toes, which represent the 10 kings. But Daniel 7 tells us where the 10 kings come from. And that's important to understand. But the problem was with the bear. We can surmise what the lion, the standing lion, represents. We can surmise what the leopard represents in modern times. But the bear was a problem, because it seems that these three world empires of the early 20th century were going to merge themselves together, provide the 10 kings, and become the beast power. Now, that's a little hard to swallow, considering the animosity that existed between Russia, if Russia is the bear. Is there a more logical conclusion? But considering the animosity that has existed between the bear and the other two empires, it doesn't seem logical. How possibly could the bear merge himself with the other two? I mean, that's a world power, so we've thought anyway. Well, the situation with the bear has changed. I don't know if people are paying attention. There was an article that I wrote more than 20 years ago, and the subtitle of that article was "The Problem Was with the Bear." And I can send that article to anyone by email if they'd like to see it. It's also chapter 6 in the Beast and False Prophet booklet over there. But it understood that it's just illogical to think that the Russian bear would merge with the rest of Europe, considering. And from our point of view in the last 20, 30 years, that's very logical. It's a hard swallow to think that that kind of thing could happen. But let's look at the reality of the day right now. The Russian bear has entered into an unwinnable war. They've used outdated tactics. They've used up their hardware, their planes, their ships, their tanks. They're all getting obliterated in massive numbers. Inexpensive weapons are destroying multi-million dollar weapons. It's beyond their ability to win. And as a result, not only have they drained themselves militarily, but they're on the verge of economic collapse. Their customers for their oil and gas have dried up. In fact, they've had to cut back willingly because they can't even supply themselves. Power is out in many important cities in Russia, including Moscow itself. Can you imagine going through a winter without power, without heat? The news hasn't said much about that, but it's not hard to find out. Their oil revenues have been restricted. Even their home consumption and distribution has been disrupted by the war that they've walked into, thinking it was going to be a cakewalk, and the reality has come to bear that there's no such thing. Their military hardware is depleted. Just as a demonstration, they shot off an ICBM back in December just to prove their military prowess, should they need to be exhibited. Thing is, the rocket blew up within sight of the launch pad. Okay? An embarrassment for sure. This is one of their best, proven ICBMs that could carry nuclear warheads. Don't know what was on it, but it was sure a big fireball when it hit the ground. Another important factor, a disaster for the Russians, is the loss of their allies. A year ago, they lost Syria. Syria was an important ally. It gave them access to the Mediterranean, gave them a port. Assad fell, and they lost Syria as an ally. 3 weeks ago, they lost Venezuela, another important ally that they promised to protect. And what happened, happened so quickly and so cleanly that there was no possibility of reaction. Not that they could have anyway, with the situation that they're in on the border of Ukraine. And they are, as we speak, losing their most direct and important ally, Iran. People don't know that 40% of their munitions that they're using in their war with Ukraine is being produced in Iran. What does that mean? Around the world, they've lost their influence. They've lost their ability to project power. They've lost their allies. And more important than that, between Syria, Venezuela, and Iran, they have, well, the world has seen the loss of sponsors of international terrorism. Okay? Who's been funding all these terrorists? Who's funding Hamas? Who's funding the terrorists and the narcos in this part of the world? That has been eclipsed. That has been taken away in a spectacular way that who would have predicted that? And then you have China. How do they factor into this? China seems to be somewhat friendly towards Russia, but they're holding their options open if you're paying attention. A lot of people don't know that, but Russia has sold the rights to operate in their far eastern regions because they need the cash. Their economy is destroyed. They're not going to be able to recover for many, many years. There is the potential loss of Siberia to China or simply going independent. There is a consensus among the Siberians that they would like to secede from Russia. Doesn't make the news, but keep your eyes open. It's something like that could happen. What does that mean? That means Russia has the potential of losing their Far East. In fact, their middle. Now, what would that do? Well, that would bolster the 200 million man army that is prophesied to come. Because those people to the east of the Urals are largely Oriental in ethnicity. Who are they going to ally with if push comes to shove? But if China was to take Russia's Far East, what could they do about it? I mean, they're having trouble moving the front line in Ukraine. They're going to be able to drive another power out of their Far East? You know, think about the implications of these things. Now we have some secondary effects of the Venezuelan situation. Cuba is in dire straits because it was getting a lot of assistance from Venezuela, particularly oil supplies. That isn't going to happen anymore. Certainly not to the degree that they've been used to. And then there's a huge loss of funding of the terrorist groups that are operating in this hemisphere. That's not going to happen anymore. There's going to be major disruptions of drug trafficking. We've taken out a drug kingpin before in Panama. We've taken another one out. A positive effect or a positive development, yes. But let's understand that these things are serious setbacks within the extreme left agenda people. But more importantly, what we're seeing is a component in the formation of the beast power. Granted, it's indirect, but it does answer an important question. The Russian bear, through its own stupid actions, has rendered itself impotent militarily anymore, and for that matter, economically. They don't have the ability to sell energy to Europe and other countries that they once had. Now think about Eastern Russia. Eastern Russia is a very different religion. It's a very different ethnicity. It has different objectives, different understandings, different alliances than the West. Western Russia is, when you use that word, Israelitish. They're descendants of the tribes of Israel. Their religion is Russian Orthodox, which is basically the same thing as Greek Orthodox. And it was the Greek Orthodox leg of the Roman Empire where what we call Christianity first developed. Did not come out of Rome. That's a myth. Up until the 700s AD, Constantinople was the focal city of what we call Christianity. Whether it was or not, it's immaterial at this point. The thing is, it wasn't Rome. Rome moved into the scene later. Just something to think about. We may talk about that sometime in the future. Russia's monarchy until a little over a century ago were descendants of the British crown. And they were Greek Orthodox in religion, and for that matter still are, to the degree that it's been allowed under the current regime. But they were Greek Orthodox until the Bolsheviks came in, again, a little over a century ago. And that accounts for the Byzantine architecture that you see in Russian churches. Came from Byzantium, Constantinople, Turkey. So with the loss of the Far East, should it happen, at least in influence, at least by of necessity, not necessarily by any military action against them, they could very well lose influence in the Far East. And that certainly would be a potential strengthening of the 200 million man army that we hear about. Now in Revelation 16:12 is another interesting passage. And we've heard a lot about this. This did make the news. Revelation 16:12. And this is a precursor of what is to come. It says, "And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared." That isn't necessarily going to happen in a few months. It could be a long-term trend. Now we know that Iran ran out of water. Their reservoirs are down to a fraction of what they should hold. Is this in preparation? Is this drought that we see, this lack of water, a precursor of what's to come? Now think long term. This may go on for decades. We don't know how long. But the point is, it's a factor in what's coming. Now in Daniel 9:27, there's an interesting passage, and it's not one that we have focused on in our particular belief system. But the world's religions do. Daniel 9:27. There are people in the evangelical world, people we would call prophecy buffs, who believe in a 7-year tribulation. Now, our idea is half of that. We understand the Great Tribulation to be 3.5 years. And perhaps it's just a misnomer on their part. But they're looking at the idea of this phase of the end time world power being within a span of 7 years. They don't explain it that well, but I've heard others explain it. Some think that the first 3.5 years are going to be a period of great prosperity and peace. And that sort of conforms to certain scriptures that talk about peace being interrupted. Their explanation then gets to the point that in the middle of that week of 7 years, there's going to be a change. And that will be the beginning of the intensive Great Tribulation as we understand it. Let me read this passage from the internet that might explain it a little bit. It says, the 7 years of tribulation refers to a future prophetic period inferred from prophecies in the book of Daniel, particularly chapter 9, verse 27, where a covenant is made for 1 week, and that being interpreted as 7 years. This period involves intense divine judgment, the rise of the Antichrist, who breaks the covenant at the midpoint after 3.5 years, leading to the Great Tribulation with widespread persecution, war, and disasters culminating in Christ's return. Key King James Version passages describing events within this period include Matthew 24:21 and Revelation 6:19. But here's the thing. If their understanding, if their explanation has any validity to it, we might see the development of roughly 3.5 years of peace and prosperity like we wouldn't expect. Now think about the world condition we have right now. The three most evil rogue nations in our time, at least the Allies, have been negated. The terrorist organizations have been massively defunded. We're seeing an increase in prosperity, at least in this hemisphere, that we have not seen or expected. Could it be that we're going to enter a period of peace and prosperity for the next few years? How many years are left of this current administration? Because that's where a lot of this force that's affecting the world condition is coming from. It's astounding when we think about it in practical reality. What's going on? This isn't what we would have predicted necessarily, that we're entering that 7-year period. Now let's go back to the earlier question that I started with. Is there a spiritual force at work behind the scenes would it be a positive spiritual force or would it be a negative spiritual force? Considering the fact that the full outcome of this is going to be the rise of the beast power. And how does that beast power rise? It rises by the accumulation of, or merging together of these three world empires that become a beast like we've never seen. The problem has been with the bear. It's inconceivable that Russia would come hat in hand to their European counterparts and want to merge together. But now let's think about something. It talks about 10 kings. The beast power is formed of 10 kings who put their minds together and who create the political entity that we know as the civil beasts. Now, there's a religious beast behind the scenes as well, but let's think about that political beast first. Could we, by watching the collapse and embarrassment and demise of the bear as a military and economic force, could we see them humbled to the point where they realize for their own self-preservation against forces to their east that they need to merge for protection? Is that a possibility? Because you see, that answers the problem with the bear. If in fact it were humbled to that point in time, to that degree, to where that could happen, then there's an answer that maybe we haven't thought about. Is there a spiritual force working behind the scenes to create a fulfillment of the prophecy of Daniel 7, where the standing lion and the leaning bear and the leopard are going to merge themselves together, which is where the 10 monarchies have existed for the last couple hundred years until recently? 7 of those monarchies are still in existence. Only takes a couple more to bring it up to the 10. Those 10 monarchies are ethnically related. Those 10 monarchies, their people are ethnically similar. Their cultures are similar. Their religion is similar enough. Where else could 10 kings come from if not from Europe? But the problem is explaining how it be that Russia would be in amongst them. With the humiliation of the Russian Empire, as we see, what's left of it, is that a factor in this picture? And that's what I want to pose to you. I mean, this may be too outlandish. It may be too hard to believe. This is crazy, if you want to say that. I'm just laying open the possibility that the prophecy will be fulfilled. We know that it will be fulfilled. God has said he will do all his pleasure, Isaiah 46, 9, and 10. Even if there is a spiritual influence working behind the scenes, there is also this factor. You see, God has the upper hand on the fulfillment of prophecy. He may use the spiritual forces that exist in the world to create the condition that he wants created. And we know what that condition is by reading Daniel chapter 7. There will be a coalition of nations that are going to create the beast power. That coalition will produce 10 kings. Those 10 kings will stand right to the end, which are at the toes of the image that we read in chapter 2. The second coming of Jesus Christ is going to smash those 10 kings. Going to smash their empire. The problem is trying to conceive of how, under the remotest circumstances, that the great adversary, Russia, could be within that. It could happen. I'm just posing it. Looking at what's going on, looking at the great fall, I mean, the loss of the breakup of the Soviet Union was monumental in itself. But today, it's gone so far beyond that, where their military is basically destroyed, self-destroyed. They're using tactics that were relevant in World War II, but today's warfare is so different. They can create a drone that can take out a ship, a few hundred dollars against massively millions. Tanks are being lost right and left. They just can't go in with tanks anymore. Drones take them out. There's no loss of life on the side of the defender. They can't overfly certain planes over the battle area. Just can't do it. It's too unsafe. Their best jets aren't working for them. Okay? We need to pay attention to what's going on. What I see is the development of a new world condition. And to me, it appears that that world condition is going to facilitate the possibility of the bear joining forces with the lion and the leopard. We do know that that prophecy will be fulfilled. How it comes to be bears watching. But I see this as a possibility. In Isaiah 46, 9 and 10. And this is God telling us something about his ultimate purpose. Remember this, verse 8, and show yourselves men. Bring it again to mind, O you transgressors. Remember the former things of old. For I am God and there is none else. I'm God and there is none like me. There's no other gods. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. God has a plan. That plan is laid out in prophecy. That plan is specifically laid out in what we would call the prophecy in Daniel chapter 7. Are we seeing world conditions develop to the point where that prophecy can come together as it ultimately will? It's hard to say. But should we dismiss the relevance of the political developments that we see right now? What would spur Russia to become enjoined with Europe? Well, it would be military ineffectuality. They couldn't defend themselves by themselves. Then at a point in time, right in the middle of these 7 years, we're going to have the two witnesses that God is going to ordain. They're going to address political matters. We tend to think of them as a soul-winning crusade. I don't think that's really their objective at all. They're going to tell the world the truth. The truth that it doesn't want to hear. That's in Revelation chapter 11. What they're going to have to say is going to be a shock to secular society, and they're going to react very negatively to it. In chapter 11, verse 10, it shows what kind of response they're going to get. It's not going to be a great swoon of admiration. They're going to grab them and kill them before the cameras. They're going to leave the bloody mess in the street for 3 days. That too will happen. But it will happen after the formation of the beast power, because it's the beast that rises out of the bottomless pit that we read of to begin with, that is going to do the deed on behalf of society at that time. But what we have before us right now is something that we could never have imagined. I remember as a kid in church, back in the most intense sex portion of the Cold War, imagining Russia, what it represented, what it could do, the power that it had. It was frightening. People were building fallout shelters back then. That's changed. It's different now. What would spur Russia to go hat in hand to their European counterparts? Well, it's a thing called fear. That would do it. Fear for survival. Now, we also something to think about. Under the current Russian regime, it's still unthinkable. But if that regime is overthrown, like it's going to be very soon in Iran, okay, there could be a whole different mindset in operation. Especially when they realize that their military bluster is nothing but wind. Okay? Think about it. The world is developing. It's coming together differently than we might have predicted ourselves even 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. It's a different day right now. But the problem has been with our perception of the bear. Back to Daniel chapter 12, verse 9. I don't know that we need to read it again, but it's the place that says that the things are sealed until the time of the end. Whatever that means, whatever you want to take it to mean, one thing we know, that the seal that has been placed upon these prophecies is going to be lifted, and they're going to be clear, and they're going to be understandable, particularly to the peoples of God. We have the prophecies. We have the availability of God's Spirit. But the developments of the last few years certainly portend the conditions for the first 3.5 years of the 7 that we read of. Is there going to be 3.5 years of prosperity and peace? Would seem to be. Something else we know about is the restoration of the ceremonial practices in Israel, in Judah actually, not so much Israel, in Judah. It's very profound. The possibility, and I would consider the likelihood, that we're going to see the beast power come together. That's not a positive thing of and by itself, other than to realize that God is working out his plan, and it's going to happen the way he says. How we put it together in our minds and what conclusions we draw in advance, keep in mind we look through a glass darkly all the time. But with God's Spirit, a clarity will come through.